Just a couple of announcements before we begin. The Adoration Chapel will be open, as you know, for 24 hours starting after Mass tomorrow morning and up to just before Mass on Sunday. And the sign-up sheet for Adoration is on the back table where the ladies are waving their hands over there almost by the door. Paulette is there, and so is Barbara. And so if you would go see them and sign up for Adoration, it would be appreciated. Spend some time with the Lord this weekend. We have a request that somebody with a red, if you would, anyone that has a red folder, I want you to take your folder and open it and see if you might have a copy of the Communio inside it. And if you have it, that folder belongs to Elaine Greenwood. So if you have it, or if you know somebody that has it, if they would drop it off again at the back table with Paulette. Okay. So, anyways. I'd like to welcome everybody to our annual regional gathering. We have, at the last count, we've had a few more drop out. So at the last count, we have about 260 who will be in attendance through the weekend. So we still have a very good representation from all of our fraternities in the region. What I'd like to do is begin with the opening prayer, which is on page 2 of your folders. I'd like for all of us to pray together. Oh, my dear God, we pray for the guidance of your most Holy Spirit. Enlighten our minds and give us courage to serve. Help us to speak the truth to one another in a spirit of love. Help us to openly listen to and witness to one another. Give us humility and a spirit of goodwill toward one another. Teach us the way of dialogue, which is the way of love. Help each of us to discover what is ours to do. Not our will, Lord, but thy will be done. Glory to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit. Amen. And let us begin with the hymn that we will be singing as our gathering hymn all weekend on page number 3. The hymn is called Woman of Light, and it's sung to the tune of Lord of All Hopefulness. It's a slain tune, Lord of All Hopefulness. Oh, woman of light, ablaze with the sun of Christ, your beloved, with whom you are one. The fire of his love burns like gold in your prayer. The joy of the cross shines like flame in the burdened by well, trammeled and free, the light-footed daughter of high poverty. You run like the lightning across summer skies, with Christ in your heart, young. of your mercy, enriching all hearts with the treasure you chose to store up in heaven for God to dispose. Oh, Holy Saint Clare, we beg you today to hold your torch high and shine on our way through gate old and narrow and up the steep road that led you to dwell in God's promised abode. Thank you, Betty, for the accompaniment. Before I make a couple of introductions, I just want to call to mind some of the things that are in your packet. And that is, you've probably already figured it out, that the pages are numbered. And the list of contents is page one, and it lists what's in the package, so hopefully you'll be able to find things. I'd like to ask that you would take time sometime over the weekend to read the excerpts from the Guidelines for Celebration of SFO Fraternity Chapters. That's on page 22 and 23. These were written a few years back by Encarnitia, who's our general minister, and it really gives a good insight on what these visitations, not just our national visitation that we're experiencing this weekend, but also the visitations that we as regional leaders perform in the various fraternities, but at every level, why it's so important that we devote time not only to come together among ourselves, but also to have time to share and be able to speak to our visitors and listen to the insights and wisdom that they have to give to us. Also, since we're celebrating the 8th centenary of Clare's admission to the family, on Palm Sunday of 1212, 800 years ago, pages 24 through 28 contain valuable information about the Poor Clares. And again, we ask that you read that. In particular, we would strongly recommend and encourage you to spend some of your personal time reflecting on pages 26 and 27 during this weekend. Now what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask anyone that is here for the first time, would you please stand up? Wonderful, welcome. We have a number of new councils that were elected and or appointed since our last gathering, and I'd just like to recognize them very briefly. The St. Thomas More Fraternity from Wilmington, North Carolina, Minister is Linda Peronco, Vice Minister Brenda Wells, Secretary Debbie Cotis, Treasurer Marie Mallon, Formation Director Bonnie Lorino, and Counselor Margaret Horan. Those of you who are here, would you please stand so we may recognize you? As you see, we still have quite a few people that are getting in and registering. Next, we have Our Lady of the Blessed Sacrament Fraternity from Burlington, North Carolina. Our minister, Paula Zanka, who is also one of our area counselors, who for the very first time since we've had annual regional gatherings, she and Alan are unable to be with us this weekend because of a 300th anniversary celebration of a family member. So they're having a big gathering up in Pennsylvania. So please keep Paula in your prayers that she will have a really enjoyable time. And we will miss her, but she is where she needs to be right now for this weekend. Vice Minister, who is here representing Paula, Teresa Frazier, Secretary Brian Ward, Treasurer Marion Dukowski, Formation Director Carolyn Ashby, Councillor Alan Zanka, and Councillor Kay Sutcliffe. Any of you that are here this evening, welcome and congratulations. St. Elizabeth of Hungary Fraternity. And I can tell already that if I go through all the names, and I'm not trying to slight anybody, but if I go through all the names, we'll be here a little longer. So I'm just going to name the fraternity and the minister, and those of you on that council, if you would stand up. St. Elizabeth of Hungary Fraternity in Augusta, Georgia, Minister Ken Wesling. St. Anthony of, there's the rest of them. I knew you were here somewhere. St. Anthony of Padua Fraternity, Fayetteville, North Carolina, Minister Ray Miller. St. Francis of the Living Waters Fraternity in Franklin, North Carolina, John Knippel, Minister. Father Solanus Casey Fraternity, Moorhead City, North Carolina, Minister Charles Stefan. Stigmata of St. Francis Fraternity in Conyers, Georgia, Minister Jim Moran. Our Lady of Good Counsel Fraternity, Greenville, South Carolina, Minister Alice Ramos. St. Elizabeth of Hungary Fraternity in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, Minister Eileen Cheney. St. Maximilian Colby Fraternity, Charlotte, North Carolina, Minister Tom O'Loughlin. Immaculate Conception Fraternity, Jonesboro, Georgia, Minister Sharon Loisel. And we have two newly appointed councils, the Blessed John Dunn Scotus Fraternity in Garden City, South Carolina, Minister Ellen DeCleaver. And Padre Pio Reactivating Fraternity, Raleigh, North Carolina, Minister Joanne Jakovic. We want to thank all of you who were willing to place your names in nomination for your fraternity council. This is a very important role that you are filling to serve your fraternity in that manner. And for all of you who are not on the council but in those fraternities, please remember that it's also your responsibility to support those council members and to work together for the good of the order. Now, I'd like to recognize our anniversaries this year. And we're going to do it a little different than what we've done in the past. I'm going to ask all those of you who are celebrating a 10-year anniversary in the year 2012. So you would have been professed in 2002. Would you please stand? Any 10-year anniversaries? Okay, no 10 years. How about 20 years? Do we have any 20-year anniversaries? Yay. Our sister Alice. How about 30 years anniversary? Anybody celebrating 30 years this year? Yay, Christine. How about 40 years? Do we have anybody celebrating 40 years this year? Yes, Helen Blaylock from Augusta. How about 50 years? We have any 50-year celebration? Father Steve and Okay, here's the big one. Anybody celebrating 60 years anniversary this year? Okay, so we have 50 years. Anyone more than 50 years this year? Okay, well, we have 100 years represented in these two gentlemen. So congratulations on your service and your faithfulness to the order. I'd like this time to introduce two national visitors, and we'll begin with our pastoral visitor, Father Steve Gross, who's sitting in the back. Father Steve hails all the way from Riverside, California, and is one of the gentlemen who's celebrating 50 years as a secular Franciscan. And also, Father Steve will be with us. He's an OFM conventual, as you can tell by looking at his habit, that he and Father Linus are bookends this weekend. So, but we really are happy that Father Steve was able to be with us. We look forward to spending more time with him. We've, the regional council, the spiritual assistants, had an opportunity to be with him today, earlier. And it was very delightful, and I'm sure the rest of the weekend will be as delightful, and you'll find him to be not only a man of wit and wisdom, but a true believer and a true Franciscan. And I think one of the things that came out of the quinquennial that I was blessed to attend is that we are to be authentic Franciscans. That's what we are called to be. And so we need to continue with our conversion experience each day so that we can become authentic. Our other visitor, who is the fraternal visitor, is our national minister, Tom Bellow. And hopefully he is going to walk through that door sometime before the evening is over. Because he is flying in, and his flight was due in at 6, but obviously it may have gotten hung up a little bit. Our own Janita Nellenbach went out to meet him and will whisk him away to us as soon as he gets in. So sometime during before we're our break at 8:30, hopefully Tom will have made his way here. We pray that he had a safe trip. At this point, I'd like to welcome our very own regional spiritual assistant, Father Linus DeSantis, who is going to speak to us about St. Clair, a light for the friars minor. And you'll notice the theme all weekend is celebrating family, and in particular, our second order, and the Poor Clares. We're delighted that we have three different presentations over the weekend on St. Clair. Plus, as you notice in your program, or you may not have noticed, but on Saturday, tomorrow at 10:30, while those of us who will be having our regional council meeting will be in room 3, right here in this room, Brett Toman, OFS, is going to do a presentation in the footsteps of Claire and Francis. So I recommend it highly. Father Linus?
Yes, come in.
First of all, I want to thank you. Thank you for your prayers. I know that you've been kept informed of my challenge. Last year, August 19th, I had an encounter with a bat, and the bat won. And I went down the steps and broke my elbow, big time bad. August 22nd, I was operated on the first time. September 24th, operated on the second time because I got an infection. And this past March 30th, I was operated on again to get rid of... I really take my medication seriously. I was taking calcium citrate, and I grew so much bone, they had to cut a lot away. And to keep it from fusing again, they had to put a thing in between, not a vein, but the other thing, whatever. Medical people, you know what I mean, to separate the two bones so it doesn't grow together. I've been in physical therapy since that time. I'm at a point, and God is very, very good to me, I'm at a point that the therapy that works is the physical therapist taking, very honestly, the man is bigger than I, has hands bigger than I, wrists bigger than mine, and he twists me. It's pronation and supination. Those of you know, I can't type. Notice, I can type, but with the elbow hanging. We've got to get this moving this way, so it's this way, okay? Not yet. I can wash my back. I can clean my ears, do my hair, but I can't type yet, and that's the object. He's twisting my arm so hard. So I said, Tim, you have a lot of patients who you have to do this to? He said, I can't do this to any other patients. He says, because nobody can take the pain. I said, Steve, I don't feel pain. He said, thank your God for that. I said, okay. So that's where I am. Physical therapy. I have a brace, which works very well. It's the second one. I maxed out on the other brace. It wasn't giving enough support, but this one is doing very well. So I ask you to continue in prayer, and I am appreciative of your prayer up to this point. Thank you. Before I move into Claire, I think we need to situate ourselves in whatever we do, certainly in our professional life, in our family life, in our relational life. Why are we doing? Why are we engaging? Why are we speaking with this person? Now, we don't get into great detail all the time, but there's got to be a rationale. There's got to be a reason. You're here this weekend. Probably ask 20 of you. I'll get maybe 15 different answers. A couple of you will say basically the same thing. I want to say you're here because God wants to speak to you. God is speaking to you through the prayers that we pray together, through the liturgies that we celebrate, through the words about these particular individuals who are from our tradition, the Franciscan tradition. These individuals have reached the level of saint. They have performed miracles. They have been exemplary. They have made a difference in so many people's lives, thousands upon thousands of people's lives, not without a cost. It cost them. But like Jesus Christ, they did not count the cost. They gave of themselves totally and completely. And that's what you and I admire. The confab, the fabric that's woven together of these personalities, of these characters, they speak to us. They give us an incentive. They give us hope. They give us a desire. They inspire us. Because they, human beings like ourselves, followed a dream, embraced a vision, embraced the way of life which would complete that vision. My sisters and brothers, that's what we're here for. Jerry recognized two facets of the community present here this evening. There are many more facets of the community, but the two that he recognized are those who are currently serving as ministers to the local fraternities, as minister, as vice minister, as secretary, as treasurer, as formation director, maybe as spiritual assistant. Now, those of you embracing those offices may say, well, somebody's got to do it. That's true. Those of you who are not in that ministry role as such per se, but you're in that fraternity, he's pretty good. She's pretty good. Yeah, but we all have our challenges. When we look at one another from purely a human point of view, we sell ourselves short. What we focus on in recognizing saints like Claire and Francis, Anthony, Bonaventure, and all others of our Franciscan family, we recognize the two elements of their existence, the human and the divine. These are godly people. We recognize them as godly people. And in recognizing them as godly people, I want us, all of us, and we've been exhorted to do this from different perspectives, as we look at each other, as we look at our minister, as we look at our vice minister, as we look at our formation director, to see them as the presence of Francis to us. Or you can say the presence of Christ, yes, but I will say the presence of Francis. And if you, minister, you, formation director, you, treasurer, and whatever role you play within the fraternity, if you see yourself as Francis or as Claire, now, that's not being boastful. It's not being proud. Yeah, I'm a minister, so hey, I'm just like Francis. No. I am to serve as Francis served. I am to serve as Claire served. That's humbling. I would never voice that unless I was serious about it. The other group that... Jerry recognized are those who are celebrating anniversaries. And certainly those who celebrate those 40 and 50 years, you know, the temptation when we've been at something long enough or for a good period of time, we stand up and we look and we accept the applause and the recognition and we say, yep, this is as good as it's going to get. No. We are here, those celebrating anniversaries, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, to be sources of inspiration to each other. That's the role we serve. We've been doing this, yes, but we can recommit ourselves to do it better. Not out of pride, not out of a spirit of competition, but knowing that there is so much more to who we are, the potential that we have. Many of you know, and I will always quote it, Paul's saying, I accept it as my own. May God bring to fulfillment the good work he has begun in you. And that work is to be worked on until the day you lay down and close your eyes for the last time. God is working through each of us by way of inspiration, by way of challenge, by way of encouragement. However, God, we are the instruments, my sisters and brothers. And that's the word that I think is powerful in and of itself. It's not about me. It's about how God uses me. As I say in campus ministry, which can be daunting, can be discouraging, because from a result point of view, it ain't that great. But I just say, Lord, these are your hands, a little broken, but this is here, yours. Your legs, your mouth, and it's big. Your eyes, your ears, they're yours. You use them the way you want them to be used. And at the end, if I only see 3 or 5 or 7 or however, or maybe 20 or 30 or 40, I say, Lord, they're yours. And I'm here to minister to them the way you want me to. So my sisters and brothers, this evening, before you go to bed, just say, Lord, you want me to embrace something from this weekend, or maybe a few things. Elements that are going to move me farther on in my vocation as a secular Franciscan. Lord, may I dispose of any fear, hesitation. May I have full trust and faith in you and what you call me to do. You will give me the grace to do it. I trust you. I might be better with that off. It's feeding back, Randy. Okay, so if you keep it, I guess, low, just so that the people get some of this. Okay. Claire of Assisi, A Life Unfolding, 1193 1194, Claire was born. Born into a noble family, born into a time where there was strife between the nobility and the merchant class. There was a tug of war, each attempting to maintain and hold on to its own position. Civil upheaval in 1198 displaced the Offreducci, the Favarone family, to Perugia, leaving Assisi. Further civil upheaval, within which Francis of Assisi was embroiled, became a prisoner of the nobles in Perugia. Now we have Francis on one side and Claire on the other. Among the young, lay groups fired by evangelical zeal took to the task of preaching and unsettling the hierarchy. It was a time of great movement, a time of great change, a time of hesitation, wondering, where is this all going to lead? Who's going to win? Who's going to lose? What difference will it make? Years passed. Peace was restored between 1205 and 1210. Claire, now a young adolescent family, she and her family returned to Assisi. Francis returns to Assisi. He's healed and converted, and he became a lay penitent, renouncing his father's class and conviction. He spent his time praying in caves, repairing ruined chapels, gathering companions, and reading with radical simplicity the pages of the Holy Gospel. My sisters and brothers, we take this particular framework, this particular picture of Francis, and Claire coming back to Assisi. Claire intermittently hearing about experiencing Francis and this radical move of his. He's gone crazy. And it would seem so. Coming from a rather wealthy family, an opportunity for a business, commerce, for his future, living very comfortably in life, but letting all that go. Having wrestled with the whole idea of being a knight, wanting it, yes, tasting it, but it wasn't working. It wasn't working. Knight, a knight. For whom? For leaders of this world? Or a knight for Christ? The gospel, reading the words of the gospel, simple but yet profound and deep, struck by, influenced by the word of God. In 1209, his project of life was approved by Innocent III. He resumed in a more profound and more public fashion the preaching he had often done in the Cathedral of San Rufino. Claire's home adjoined the cathedral, and she heard the young preacher exhort the citizens of Assisi to value pax et bonum, peace and good, above all things, since these gifts were purchased by the blood of Christ. And as we know, in that time of upheaval in Assisi, in Italy, the people were exhorted to let go of the war, taking advantage, causing upheaval and unrest, recognizing that only through embracing and forgiving and understanding can man live in peace and harmony. Claire, struck by this message, sought out Francis, and he, impressed by the fame of her holiness, sought out her as well. In a year of exchanges between themselves and their companions, they determined that the Spirit of the Lord was gifting each of them with the unique and irrevocable call to life, to live the gospel anew in their time. Something new, the two of them experiencing the call of God, reflecting on it, speaking about it, hesitating, yet at the same time being drawn by it. Both of them taking inspiration from each other, encouragement from each other, seeing each other as co-spiritual directors, if you might say that. At the same time, moving in the same direction, that the gospel is the pivotal piece. The gospel is the foundational point. The gospel is the anchor that holds them in truth and honesty and in the love of God. What had been a holy life before her interaction with Francis became more pronounced, intense, and deliberate. Right here, my sisters and brothers, we live in fraternity. We come together monthly or more. How are we as an inspiration to each other? How are we having an impact on each other? Are we looking to learn? Or are we just listening and going through the motions? When we are praying in community, are we praying or just saying the words? You see, Francis and Claire lived in their time, developed, grew, progressed in their way, in their time, with the tools they had. We do it today. We develop, we grow, we change, we're transformed with the tools that we have. Social and ecclesial movements and concerns occupied Claire and the women of her class and time throughout Western Christendom. These women sought out alternatives to armed struggle, acquisition of money, and the feudal burdens of the traditional monasteries. So it was not only in the civil life that they wanted change, that they were looking for peace. They wanted men to drop their arms, that is their weapons, and embrace each other in faith and trust, but also in the church. And if any of us know the history of the church at this time, it seemed to be, and I don't say this irreverently, they did it in good faith. The leaders of the church wanted what was good for the monasteries and the communities there. Yet they overstepped their bounds. They meddled too much. They, in a sense, stifled the grace of God. But as God would have it, it was worked out. Claire's family could not prevent her from following Francis. She sought sanctuary with the Benedictine sisters. She eventually was brought to San Damiano, and she and her sisters, literally her blood sisters and others, joined together to form a community and progress in poverty. Poverty is a pivotal piece in our life. Poverty and chastity, and then ultimately, of course, obedience. But poverty, it speaks about, where does our treasure lie? What speaks to us most? To have that strength, that power that money offers, to have that ability to buy, to obtain, to hold on to possess? Money to influence, to get our way? And if you think about it, notice the money that I spend to make my life so much better. It's a comment on chastity. Who do I love? Me! It's all about me! And that's what money encourages. It gives us, quote unquote, the power to manipulate, to control, so that I can be more comfortable. Money, be careful. Finally, in 1212, on Palm Sunday night, Claire fled the home and was received into the young Franciscan movement with tonsure and investiture. Whisked away, she was received at the Abbey of San Paolo in Bastia, assuring her of sanctuary. The family furor subsided. Claire moved to San Angelo in Panzo, a tiny beginage, a member of one of the various ascetic and philanthropic communities of women not under vows, founded chiefly in the Netherlands in the 13th century. I had to look that up. I didn't know what beginage. Is that how you say that word? Okay, that's. We think about women in monasteries, and they were sincere. But the way it worked, they came from rich families. The rich families provided for them. They were able to pursue the arts. They were able to pursue prayer. They lived somewhat of a comfortable life. this Claire and others who are attempting to, how would I say, introduce a more intense and, let's say, how would you say, prayerful approach to religious life. It wasn't easy. It was something very new. It was challenging. It was startling, the whole idea of the privilege of poverty. Poverty, Claire saw as a privilege, because she understood what wealth or money can do, and how it damages also. All right, San Paolo Panzo and Tani Beginnage, where she tested once again their attempts to live a new gospel life in the midst of the citizenry. Finally, led by Francis of Assisi, she moved to San Damiano, the place that would be her home for 41 years. Joined by her sister Agnes, and then Benvenuta and Filippa, for the next 3 years, she worked arduously with Francis of Assisi to carve out her form of way of life. She experienced the bitter realities of rejection, hard work, misunderstanding from family, friends, the powerful of the church, and the powerful of the country. Now, I probably said all of that pain and suffering that she experienced in probably about 6 seconds. She experienced it for years. She experienced it to the core of her heart. She didn't have the comfort to go and eat something to salve herself, to, what do they call that, comfort food, or anything else for comfort. She stayed the course. She stayed in the monastery. She stayed there at the convent, and she suffered, not wailing or complaining, but she suffered because she had a vision. She, together with Francis, prayed and clarified who they were and what they were called to do. They prayed for the stamina to remain steadfast in following God's will, even in this most severe and this most outlandish way, this very different way. They were steadfast. You and I look and we say, oh, how wonderful, how austere, how holy, how gifted they were. Well, my sisters and brothers, you are gifted as they. You are holy, and you are called to the fullness of holiness. What we need to do is say, Lord, okay, but don't make it hurt too much. But I need to change. I need to grow. I need to fulfill that to which you called me to do. The Fourth Lateran Council was convened, its protagonist in 1215, hoping to stem the irregular tides of renewal and to bring to a close the Gregorian reform. Claire assumed the title of abbess, a small step in ecclesial confirmation. In 1216, she recognized she must go to the papal court. She convinced Innocent III shortly before his death to guarantee her the privilege of poverty, so not to be constrained to accept wealth or land or inheritance in order to pursue the radical project of living with nothing of her own. Again, I said those words in a few seconds, but it took a lifetime for her to, and as you know from the life of Claire, it took her a lifetime to see that this would be maintained, that this was promised, and the promise would be honored, the privilege of poverty, that she and her sisters would be able to be without those supporting elements, without lands, without properties, without sources of income, without privilege of place or wealth or inheritance. Humanly speaking, people looking at that, hearing this, saying, she was crazy. She was crazy for God, yes. And as I said, up until her dying day, in fact, 2 days before, when she finally had her rule approved, her rule, not the rule of one of the clerics, not the rule of one of the cardinals, but her rule. particular to their community, not out of pride, but recognizing what God called her to do, what God was calling them to do and to be. So in addition to leading a life, think about it. I'm trying to lead a good life. I want to be a person of prayer. I'm spending my time and my energy in the praise of God, in loving the sisters, in doing what's best, in ministering to all. And I have to fight to maintain the privilege of poverty? Hello? What's wrong with this picture? But she was steadfast, and she did not complain. She was persevering. She was committed. Alas, when Ugolino di Segni was appointed papal legate in Umbria and Tuscany, his mission was to bring Clare's and all other women's communities under the Benedictine rule, the reform agenda of the papal curia. Ugolino assured Clare her link to Francis and his gospel form would not be sacrificed. However, she was certain that this new strain of event would place her in contestation with the ecclesiastical friends and superiors, with her ecclesiastical friends and superiors. Now, my point or my topic is to speak about how Francis influenced the friars. I don't think she had to write a treatise. I don't think she had to write a profile as to what the friars should be doing. The friars saw what she was doing. The friars, at different times, because of their desires, their hopes, were embarrassed that they were looking to have their way as opposed to following the way that Francis marked out. She looked at them, and that's all she had to do, was just look at them. And they understood they should not be pursuing it. They should be faithful to the commitment that they made to Francis and to the Lord, to the gospel. What she did by virtue of her purity of intention, her committed life, her energy focused in a most concentrated manner, she gave a standard. She set a level. She gave an image. She gave an example of a way of life that was so good, so holy, so true, that anyone looking at it, and certainly the friars, knowing what they were called to do and who they were called to be, looked at Clare and were totally embarrassed that they would think other than what Francis would want them to do, or what the gospel was saying, or to be less than committed wholeheartedly to their way, to the way of life. That's what Clare did for us. And Clare wanted to maintain that relationship between the friars and the sisters. Brothers and sisters, very natural, God's gift, God's celebration of humankind, of male and female, of the confluence of a male approach, of a female approach, the sensitivity, the gentleness, the mind, the heart, the spirit, the energy, the direction, all found in these two individuals. And as they played off each other, they were able to teach, they were able to form their constituency, their sisters and their brothers. By 1212, Francis returned to face a new challenge. To the order now, these last 5 years of his life, he created two editions of his rule. Resigned as general. Resigned as general of the order. Somebody stole a page. Okay. In these last years, we know Francis had two very phenomenal experiences at Greccio and at La Verna. Greccio, that confirmation of Christ's love for him, Francis, that they were able to celebrate the incarnation, the generosity of God becoming a man, the humility of God, and to quote Ilia Delio, the humility, the simplicity, and the poverty, which, if we think about it, those three virtuous characteristics are, again, part of the touchstone of who we are as Franciscans. Poverty, humility, and simplicity. The incarnation. How Christ started out and how he continued until his death on the cross. Again, on the cross. Poverty, simply, and generously. La Verna, the confirmation of the Passion. He wanted to be like Christ, to mirror Christ, and so he was awarded the wounds. Again, not just to have the wounds, but to experience the wounds, the pain, the suffering. Claire became gravely ill. In 1225, Francis, now blind, returned to San Damiano for rest. Then he composed the Canticle of the Creatures. There's somewhat of a, one would say, an incongruity. How can a man dying, sickly, in pain, be so intensely aware of what surrounds him, and in reviewing what surrounds him, what has served him, what has been given to him and to us, that he celebrates. He calls us to prayer, to sing the Canticle of the Creatures, God's creation. Selfless in his own right, embracing all of what God has provided, seeing the holiness in nature, in God's creation. Again, that contrast, being in pain and suffering, but yet not focusing on it, but focusing on what God has provided. Now, I don't know if I would move in that direction. I don't think I could take the pain that he embraced. And I don't have the insight just yet. I pray God that I will get more about God's creation around me, how I can see his presence in everything. And if I can maintain a certain thought, a recognition, a prayer each day, say, Lord, let me see you in each person I meet. Lord, as I look around at what surrounds me, may I see your hand that created it. And hopefully we'll be able to grow in that regard. In 1226, Claire, at the age of 33, received the dead body of Francis. Not one destroyed by grief, but a woman strengthened by the hardships and the good gifts of real life. Claire, in the next few years, would witness yet more growth, 24 monasteries in Italy, and a foundation in Pamplona, Spain. Hugolino, now Gregory IX, insisted on confirming the relationship of the friars to the sisters. It's an interesting, it reminds me, Hugolino, Gregory IX. Gregory IX directed Thomas of Celano to write glowing stories about Claire and Francis. I would call it apocryphal if you want to say that. Gregory IX, in his mind, already in his canonized Claire. Claire rejected that totally. She said, I'm not dead yet. I'm still growing. I'm still doing. I'm still ministering. If we canonize somebody, say, oh, he's so good, so perfect, so whole, so wonderful. If we canonize someone, we stymie them. We limit them, in a sense. And that's what Claire was saying. Don't shackle me with these accolades, with this recognition. I am on the journey. What she didn't say was, when I die, you want to say the nice things, go ahead.
But now, no. She had to deal with that. Can you imagine? When people, let's say, when we observe someone being lauded, someone being applauded, someone being praised, and we say, yeah, they think they're that good? they should know them the way I know them. You see what it does? And if the person falls prey to that, oh, yes, thank you. I'll give you 4 hours to cut it out. No, I mean, it's the wrong thing. We're on the journey. And we need to realize that this is time for growth. It's time for change, for conversion, for bringing to fulfillment. Gregory restored Philip, a friend of Claire's youth, as a visitator. Beatrice, her sister, and Ortolano, her mother, joined Claire. Can you imagine the mother joining the child, following the direction of the child? Of course, Ortolano recognized Claire was God's chosen. But to her credit, I mean, a mother's a mother. I don't care how good or holy the child is. A mother's a mother. And she would want to care for. No, you don't want to do that. You want to eat a little bit more. Stop the fasting. Come on. And an Italian mother, oh my God. You know? Chiara, che fa? Cabados. But she followed and she was there, inspired to be with Claire and her sisters. She saw Francis canonized, Anthony of Padua, Elizabeth of Hungary. They all died. Claire came to realize that she was the survivor of the earliest days of the Franciscan movement. She had to protest Gregory's plan to limit the visits of the brothers to the monastery for preaching and spiritual direction. Many, I know, by virtue of having been here in the South, many of you came from the North and come to the South and no family. And it's kind of like, oh boy, you know? But as we know in the South, people are very warm and very accepting, very embracing. And that, it's good. The wound heals much more quickly. Claire didn't have that. What's that? Oh, okay, sorry. Claire didn't have that. Francis died, Anthony died, Elizabeth died. These were the people who were in the forefront of the movement. These were the people who were the inspiration. She could walk with them. And you know, when you walk with somebody on a journey, when you share a vision, it's easier. But when you have to go out and be the person to share the vision, to explain the vision, to teach the vision, to guide people, it's hard. These are people who want it. These are people who desire to embrace it, to live it. But they don't know, and you have to teach them. And you have nobody to turn to and say, Francis, how should I approach this one? Elizabeth, tell me, how does this work? Anthony, you need to preach to them. She had to do it. Intimidated, hesitant, maybe for a moment or two, but steadfast and persevering, and move forward. Again, Gregory, wanting to protect the convent. Gregory he believed in that monastic enclosure idea, separation, fearful for the vocation. But yet, Claire knew that it was good that the sisters have and the friars have the benefit of the interaction of each other. And so she maintained her position, and she won. Not so much won. She was able to keep that gift, that tool of learning, that tool of spirit, the tool of grace, of the relationship between the friars and the sisters. Here we go. A gift. Agnes of Bohemia, daughter of the King of Bohemia, founded a monastery in Prague to which she had given her fame and fortune. Claire began a 19-year friendship by letter with this woman who was energetically struggling to join in Claire's project of poverty. In these letters, we are able to look deeply into the mind, soul of Claire to realize her prudent and persevering talent for governance. Claire wasn't a pushy person. She encouraged, she showed the way, she invited. She realized people had to make a decision for themselves. She wasn't dictatorial, she wasn't controlling. And this was the same that she, with her own sisters. She recognized them as individuals. She treated them as such. And she allowed them to move at their own pace. A gift from God, to say the least. Concurrently, the great beginages of Flanders, the sisters living in those monasteries, were being founded, and young Franciscan friars were becoming lights of the new universities, flourishing across Europe. Claire's daily life was calendared by the liturgy, the days punctuated by the hours, by endless moments of work, spinning, sewing, weaving, caring for the sick and disconsolate brought to the sisters, and by incredible spiritual and apostolic solidarity with the friars. They played off each other. They encouraged each other. This was the beauty of the relationship. Each was doing his and her ministry. Each was aware of the other, serving, ministering, fulfilling that to which they have been called by their community, by their leaders. This encouraged her. She was not alone. Her reflection in the absence of Francis regarding certain extraordinary experiences would be, "Francis, how I wished you had lived to see this day." Or, "Praise be Jesus Christ, Francis, that you did not see or live to see what I saw today." For example, the day in 1240 when North African mercenaries, the Saracens, hired by Frederick II to war against Gregory IX, attacked San Damiano. Innocent IV wanted to be done with the matter of ownership and the use of goods. Claire and many monasteries with her simply refused to receive this rule. Her community spread to Germany, Poland, Slovakia. Her health waning, she began to fear the future of her enterprise. She began the task of writing her own rule. She completed it in 1252, and during a visit from Cardinal Reinaldus, the new cardinal protector, she appeared for and received his approbation. Meanwhile, the Franciscan order continued to flourish. Its problems and its promises grew with it. John of Piancarpino went on mission to China. Bonaventure became master of theology at Paris. The three companions prepared a new biography of Francis, and the four masters wrote a commentary of the rule. And Claire, too, had her work to do. As she lay dying in 1253, she was visited twice by the Pope, whose rule she rejected. As we know, ultimately, her rule was approved 2 days before she died. She died in peace. She died with a smile. Relevance of Claire, first principle, a gift from God, a result of grace, saw Francis's vision clearer than anyone else, and to be able to articulate that vision, continue in her writings. Principle number two, Claire exercised this gift in the 13th century. Different culture, mindsets, expressing the vision in the imagery and vocabulary of that time. The 13th century rap takes a little longer to get into it. Third principle, we have to get over learned attitudes. That is, Claire is for women, Francis for men. applying the principle, use substance and accidents. Substance equals what Claire is saying, the message. Accident equals how she is saying it, imagery, and terminology. Fourth principle, the way Claire is relevant is by making her relevant in our Franciscan lives. It has to be personally applied. Be grateful for our vocation and all the time we have been called through the years. Vows are a means, or promises are a means, to live as an intimate in an intimate relationship with the Lord. Poverty should be viewed in the context of chastity. Chastity is the pivotal vow. With the vow of chastity, we choose the Lord to be our life companion. It is He with whom we share our lives. Poverty becomes holy when it is a means to an end, not an end in itself. Obedience facilitates love. With free will, we choose to love Christ as He genuinely loves us. We, in return, surrender ourselves to Him. Claire and the women at San Damiano were proven in the hands, were pawns in the hands of popes, cardinals, and visitators. Cloister, poverty, rule. It was a male-dominated church. Claire was challenged to maneuver the waters with charity and grace, and so she did. It was quite the challenge. Another major item was the holding of benefices, lands, property, to sustain the nuns. Historically, women religious came from rich and well-to-do families who were able to support these women in a manner to which they were accustomed. The focus at that time was prayer and the arts. Manual labor was not on the agenda. Furthermore, the church did not want them to become dependent on the support of the church. San Damiano became the focal point based on Franciscan poverty, which assured the Franciscan reference to the gospel and gospel journey. Claire held the papal rescript whereby San Damiano would remain without property. My sisters and brothers, a woman and a group of women, many women, sought to love Christ, sought to live in community, in harmony, in peace, working very hard, manual labor, free of contact with the world, abstaining from the world's pleasures, giving themselves to holy and religious thoughts. And yet at the same time, they were plagued with concerns of other people, mainly men in the church, concerns which involved money, property, wealth, protection, concerns of a lack of ability on the part of these women, and maybe even concerns that God would not see this through. Maybe out of goodwill, but nonetheless, seeking to protect their interests. Claire was civil and charitable. Claire was an inspiration. Claire was God's gift to the people of that day and to the people of today. May we embrace her love, her perseverance, her vision, her energy. May we embrace the goodness that she has taught us. Thank you.
Brothers and sisters, we've heard about Francis and Claire, who were the first of our servant leaders. What I'd like to do now is introduce to you our national minister, who is our servant leader at the national level, who, through the Executive Council, works very diligently to support not only all of our regions, but all of our local fraternities, and to assist us in our situations that may come up, but does it in a spirit of service. And I'd like to just have him stand up a minute so we can recognize him. Mr. Tom Bellow, Deacon Tom Bellow. Welcome, brother. Now what I'd like to do is also introduce those servant leaders who serve each of you at the local level, and that's the Regional Executive Council. I purposely waited till now to do this because I wanted our brother Tom to also see who those members are. And so I'd ask the council to come up here on the stage, please. And as they come up, I will introduce them. I'm Jerry Rousseau, the regional minister for the Brothers and Sisters of St. Francis Region. And our vice minister is Frank Massey. Frank, if you come up here. From Greensboro, from family of Franciscan family of Greensboro. Our secretary, Christine Washington. And Christine is from the fraternity in Bessemer, Alabama, St. Joseph of Cupertino. Our treasurer, Greg Savold. Greg, come on up. Greg is from Hendersonville, North Carolina, not far from here. And he's with the St. Francis of the Hills. I always get Hills and Living Waters confused. St. Francis of the Hills. And, of course, you've already met our regional spiritual assistant, Father Linus DeSantis. We have six area counselors. Area one is Willie Guadalupe and John Knippel. Willie is from the Immaculate Conception Fraternity in Jonesboro, and John is from St. Francis of the Living Waters Fraternity in Franklin, North Carolina. Area two counselors, we have Sarah Nell Boggs from Spartanburg, South Carolina, and Dr. Charles Meyer from Augusta, Georgia. Sarah Nell is with the St. Michael the Archangel Fraternity, and Dr. Charles is with St. Elizabeth of Hungary in Augusta. Finally, our two Area 3 counselors are Paula Zanka and Dorothy Ann Rowland. As I've already mentioned, Paula is not with us this evening. She is from the Burlington Fraternity, Our Lady of Blessed Sacrament. And Dorothy Ann is a new face for many of you. Dorothy Ann graciously accepted the appointment as Area 3 counselor. She is from Hilton Head Island, Sacred Hearts of Jesus and Mary Fraternity. And she is replacing our dearly beloved Jane Ferris, Sullivan Ferris, who passed away this year. So we appreciate Dorothy Ann accepting that challenge and volunteering to assist us on the council. And while she's not officially elected to the council, she is appointed. I would like to also introduce to you a young woman which some of you met last year because she attended our annual gathering for the first time, and that is our dear sister Carolyn Towns from Columbia, South Carolina, who is our JPIC animator. Also, we have our formation director. There you are. I'm looking. Faye Martin, and Faye is from Channel of Peace Fraternity in Chattanooga. And I believe that is your elected Regional Executive Council for the Brothers and Sisters of St. Francis. And if we had the music up for Waka Waka Franciscana, I would make him do it, but maybe we'll have an encore. Anyways, we are going to break, and we will adjourn over to Mountain Laurel Building, the connector. We have set up refreshments there. Please stop, get some refreshments, share with one another, take time with one another. We have listened to you in the evaluations last year. We had several comments that asked that we not go until 9 o'clock each evening. So as you can see, it's about 8:15, and we are calling it a night. And we look forward to seeing all of you over a cold lemonade or iced tea or coffee or whatever else we have there in refreshments. Thank you very much. God bless. Have a great night, and we'll see you in the morning. And Paulette is waving to remind us. What is that? Somebody left a coffee maker on the table in the back. We're taking up registrations for the Adoration Chapel. So please stop by and sign up there as well as you leave. Thank you very much.
Also, I left some packets at the back table for people who are getting the fund manual and the CDs. Also, all the extra CDs are back there that I told you about. I forgot to deliver them. We've had a very busy day, very wonderful day. Anyway, check again for the CDs and the manuals that I promised to either three or four people. Your names are on them. Thank you.